It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. Time for our Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. We're reaching out to him via Skype and phone, seeing which one of these we can connect with him. We saw him there just a second ago, but he dropped off of the Skype. So let's see if we can get him connected here. We've got a lot of topics to discuss, and it looks like we've got the doctor on the line. How you doing, Dr. Mitch?
Okay, sorry about the Skype connection. I'm not sure what's going on
here. Yeah, computers, you know how they are.
Exactly.
Hey, before we get started, I wanted to let folks know that Dr. Mitch has a new podcast that he is producing, and you can find it at cannabisradio.com. What's your podcast all about, Dr. Mitch?
Oh, it's intriguing. I end up just interviewing some of the folks who've published recent data on cannabis, or talking to some of the folks who are, you know, out there in the trenches and doing some of the legislative work. And then I usually wrap it up with this 6-minute segment called things about taking care of good activists and trying to, you know, have good self-care and stuff like that. So it's not going to be as fun as Cannabis Q&A with Russ Belville, but it'll be informative nonetheless.
Well, I think it's awesome that first Danny Danko, now you, I've managed to drag y'all kicking and screaming into the world of podcasting. I'm glad I could have a hand in it.
In fact, when you go to that website, you'll see a few other of our regular friends are getting talked into it as well.
Yeah, it's great platform out there. People are really starting to get into it. I saw Kyle Cushman out there and a few others. So looking forward to hearing more of that. All right, folks, remember, we're ready for your Cannabis Q&A. If you've got a question for Dr. Mitch, you can put it into our chat room at 420radio.org, or you can call us live toll free at 844-207-2346. And while we wait for some of your questions, I've got a few stories here on tap to ask the good doctor. And the first one here, and I'm going to call this the Rob Cantrell question, because he's always talking about how coffee and weed is the hippie speedball. But apparently there's a new study out that says drinking coffee actually enhances the marijuana high. So I guess there is something to the coffee shop model, isn't there, Dr. Mitch?
In fact, there is, and I mean, talk about two great tastes that go great together. What a surprise that this would work. I'm afraid some of the coverage has been terrible. So they talk about cannabis working in the dopamine system and then caffeine working in the dopamine system, and neither of those are really exactly correct. But cannabis does interfere with adenosine, which, you think about adenosine as sort of the brake on your arousal system. It's a way to let you know that you're tired, and caffeine, basically, if you can imagine putting a little brick in the way of your brake on your car, that's sort of how it works. It's not that it makes you stimulated so much as keeps you from sending your brain the message that you're tired. And the combination between that and cannabis does seem to enhance these subjective effects, but we're still at the you know, rodent level, and I'm optimistic that a lot of our listeners will go out and gather data of their own.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure we will. The hippie speedball lives. Another study that is out, I caught this one on NPR. It says smoking pot interferes with math skills. It came out on the 9th, and today's the 15th. So that's, gee, I can't figure it out, Dr. Mitch. Can you help me?
Well, what's funny is this was actually a very long paper trying to take advantage of the idea that the Netherlands was changing some of their laws about students who happen to be there from other countries and not letting them have access to the coffee shops in the same way. And it was a really convoluted thing. And they also had 50,000 students on record whose grade they could look at. And the problem with having 50,000 students, of course, is really tiny differences end up looking statistically significant simply because the sample size is so huge. So the more I was looking at this, the more I realized, like, basically, folks who formerly had access to the shops and subsequently didn't might have lost 4 points on their final exam. So it's too much to try to make. I felt like the headlines made it sound like you were going to smoke a bunch of pot and then try to, you know, take the determinant of the Jacobian. And of course, nobody could do that.
Yeah. You know, I think smoking pot, if anything, in this country has introduced people to the metric system and how to do complex math calculations in their head. Let's see, if we're going to buy an ounce at 280 and an ounce is 8 quarters, divide by 8. I mean, come on now.
It's funny how the appreciation for grams in the underground market. Yes.
Yes. All right. We got some questions from our chat room. John Thomas wants to know, is there any data on marijuana consumption and longevity?
So not in humans, but the antioxidant properties were working all the way up the phylogenetic spectrum to at least rodents, and it's not that they're living longer, but they're not showing some of the oxidative stress that we usually associate with aging. And, you know, as you go to the next normal conference and run into these older folks who don't look so old, I think it'll be consistent with it, and we're going to start gathering those data, I think, as soon as NIH will cough up the money.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen pictures of the before and afters of twins, where one twin was a tobacco smoker and the other twin was not. And my God, it's like the smoking twin looked like, you know, 10, 15 years older. So we know tobacco smoke is going to age you like that, but cannabis doesn't seem to be that.
Well, what's intriguing is because it's not nicotine, it's THC instead. THC has all these antioxidant properties, so I doubt we're going to get that same wrinkling that we often see with nicotine and the other stimulants. But more importantly, at the cellular level, I think you're not creating those sort of bunker proteins that really aren't any good use, because you don't have the same level of oxidized things just floating around your cells doing no good. Mm-hmm. If you run into Albion Musica or anybody you know who's, you know, used for years and years, it's often pretty impressive. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, absolutely agreed. LV and other folks I know, older tokers in their 60s and their 70s, even in their 80s, seem to be much more spry and youthful looking and sharp. And there might be something to that. All right, let's get to another question. Roland Reverend in our chat room asks, if someone has a fatty liver, are edibles a good thing or should they be avoided?
As it turns out, fatty liver is probably not going to be a big issue with edibles. It's just that your ability to metabolize them is something you're going to really want to keep an eye on, because your chances of breaking it down at the same rate as somebody who doesn't have that are probably slim. So it's another one where you probably want to make sure you got a source where it's, you know, 10 milligrams or less, to see how that's going to go, and to make sure, like with all edibles, you give yourself plenty of time before you decide to redose.
Mm-hmm. All right. And we've got a question from Lively Libra, who asks, is the female cannabis infused vaginal gel that purports to cause a vaginal orgasm really true? And why is it only available in California? Libra's in Colorado, you see.
Well, I mean, I don't want to pretend like I know everything about every female orgasm, but it sounds pretty unlikely. So, yeah, we definitely need plenty of stimulation outside just the vagina, and I don't think THC is necessarily the fast track to that, so I'm still waiting for published data on that one.
Okay. We got another question asking, and this got some big words in it. Considering the modulatory properties of cannabis and its biphasic effects, combined with morphine, is a larger or smaller dose more effective?
What's intriguing is it depends on what your definition of effective is. So if you're trying to get a subjective high, probably there's going to be a decrease as far as those opiate things are concerned. And in fact, when you run into, you know, old-timer heroin users, they'll say, I don't smoke pot because I can't feel the junk in the same way. Hmm. Nevertheless, for the analgesia effect, that aspect, cannabis would probably be helpful, and you could probably use less of the opiate under those circumstances, in part because it seems like they're separate pathways, but sort of ones that tend to work together as far as analgesia is concerned. And so then that would be in some ways an enhancement.
Okay. This is a really interesting story I've got pulled up here from Medical Jane. This was from the 9th as well. A new study that says that THC might help to prevent transplant rejection. And my God, how ironic is that when so many people get kicked off of transplant lists for using cannabis?
And this one really blew my mind, and I've only seen the news coverage. I haven't seen the original data. So I'm not particularly clear on how that would function, other than we're not seeing those T-cell and B-cell immunosuppression that we got in those high-dose things that were always done in the Petri dish. And we knew this from the AIDS community before, that we really aren't getting that deficit in immune function that everybody so feared from cannabis. But the notion that it would actually enhance it, I think in some ways it may be that the notion of rejection is in some ways this kind of immune function gone awry. And so it may be stimulating the suppressor cells in a way that it keeps you from rejecting it in a way that could be interpreted as immunosuppression, but in fact is adaptive under these circumstances. Does that make sense?
Yeah. I think I've got you. And it's interesting, this this area of the science on this. I just hope that they, regardless of whether THC is going to help organ transplants or not, it doesn't seem to harm them, does it?
In fact, no. And the fact that people are getting rejected, particularly for some of that liver transplant stuff that we've talked about in months ago, is not just ironic, but genuinely sad. It seems completely unfair. And just from the mechanics of the nausea and things like that associated with some of the other medications that you're on under those circumstances, it seems like cannabis should definitely be considered as a frontline aid rather than something to keep people from getting a liver.
Yeah. All right, folks, we're just about out of time with Dr. Mitch, but if you want to get your question answered privately, you can always send an email to 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And our final topic here, we've seen a lot of reports coming across about poison control centers having to deal with twice as many synthetic marijuana problems and a tripling of synthetic marijuana deaths from 5 to 15 just in the first 4 months of this year compared to last year. Any comments on the synthetic marijuana, what appears to be an epidemic?
I mean, all I can say is stay away from that nasty stuff. THC is a partial agonist for the CB1 receptor, and these things are always full-blown, hardcore agonists, nothing partial about them. The quality control is not there, in part because they're often marketed as some kind of incense or something that's not for human ingestion. And believe me, they really are not for human ingestion. So I trust these data, and I feel like let's go with the plant that has 5 millennia of safety rather than something new.
Yeah, and of course, so many people are using that synthetic stuff because it's not showing up on their workplace or school drug tests. So they're trying to get the marijuana high without having to deal with the consequences. I guess we should just legalize it.
The irony of that is too sad to even comment on.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks, Dr. Mitch. Good luck with the podcast, and we'll talk with you next week.
Thanks so much, man. Talk to you soon.
All right. Stay tuned, folks. We've got time for a radical rant in which we announce the 51st United State. That's right. There's going to be 51 states. Did you hear? That's coming up next on the Russ Belville Show.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
420 Radio.